So, good evening, everyone. And yes, this is the final evening of our... We said February would be Dogen month. And so it's extending just a little bit into March. This is the last of the four sessions that we've been doing, what I've been calling Essential Dogen. And as you look at the screen, I don't think there's anybody who... is completely new, so I think everybody knows who Dogen is. Our first Japanese ancestor in Soto Zen, who lived in the 13th century. For the first 2 weeks of this series, we looked at one of his earliest texts, earliest writings. After he came back from China. And he was just a young man, Fukan Zazengi, usually translated as General Advice on the Principles of Zazen. And Dogen's emphasis in that text is on the oneness of practice and realization, which we talked about the first week, and the core practice of Zazen, which is to think, not thinking. And we talked about that the second week. So if you missed those, you can find them on the website under teachings. I'm not going to review. But these are, you know, the Dogen's core teachings about our actual Zazen practice. And those themes come up throughout his work. But in that text, Fukan Zazengi, he doesn't mention at all how we take that practice, our Zazen practice, out into everyday life. What about the precepts? What about the paramitas, generosity, patience, etc.? We have to look elsewhere for those, and we can find them in Dogen and other parts, other sections or fascicles of Dogen's Shobo Genzo, Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. But for hundreds of years, Dogen's writings were largely forgotten, as I've mentioned before. They were passed down secretly in handwritten form. And his work was difficult for ordinary Japanese readers. Even today, when, you know, there are versions translated into modern Japanese from classical Japanese, it's still difficult. So don't feel bad if you find the English translations difficult. It is not easy reading, as we've said. So, in 1890, over 500 years after Dogen's death, a group of largely Soto Zen lay practitioners compiled a text called Shushogi, Principles of Practice and Realization. And they pieced together excerpts under four main themes, called the Four Main Principles. So last week we talked about repentance and the precepts. Those are the first two. And today we'll talk about the Bodhisattva vows and gratitude. Those are the four sections, or the four main principles. Now, wave your hand if you had a chance to actually print the Shushogi out or open the PDF and look at it and read it. Yeah, so some of you have and some haven't, but that's okay. It's still there. You know what I should do? I should put the PDF on the recordings under teaching so people can find it there, because it's going to go off the event listing after today. I'll try and remember to do that so that people can find it, because it's not included elsewhere. It's not an easy text to find. Although it's chanted every day in Zen monasteries, it's very, very commonly used in Japan, but not here in the West. Last week, I called the Shushogi a kind of Reader's Digest version of the Shobo Genzo, but that's not really accurate, because the excerpts from the Shushogi are drawn from only 24 out of the 95 fascicles or sections of Shobo Genzo, and most of those 24 sections come from the last years of Dogen's life, where he started to put more emphasis on the precepts on ethical conduct and the qualities of a bodhisattva. Something about aging. We know he didn't. You know, he didn't tell us why, but you know, it was after a long trip he made to see on the invitation of the shogun, who lived in Kamakura at that time, and there's speculation about him sort of refusing the shogun's patronage and. Perhaps there was some turning to reflections in his later years that led him to look at those bodhisattva qualities in a different way. We can only speculate. But these teachings in the Shushogi, as I said, were selected primarily by and for lay practitioners who were not expected to pursue intensive zazen practice. So in the Shushogi, there's no mention of zazen, of Dogen's fundamental teachings of zazen. Just as in Fukanza Zengi, there's no mention of the bodhisattva practices. So the two texts form a kind of odd yet fitting or complementary pair, separated by centuries. And as I mentioned last week when I talked about repentance, that emphasis on repentance was influenced by Western thinking and Christianity. And the Shushogi has been criticized by seeming to promote a kind of faith-based or very formulaic practice of repentance. That can be used to gloss over harmful behavior and social injustices. A too easy way of sweeping wrongdoing under the carpet through repentance. As I think you may know, I'm preparing for a weekend retreat at the end of the month on the practices of repentance, apology, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And in the reading I was doing, I read about a Catholic priest who had sexually abused a boy who then, in adulthood, confronted the priest. And the priest actually justified his acts by saying, "Oh, well, I always repented and confessed the next day." As though that somehow canceled out the harm he'd done. So the practice of repentance and of the precepts needs to be informed by the wisdom and compassion that arise from wholehearted continuous practice. They can't, if they aren't balanced, the practice is unstable, put it that way. And that's where bodhisattva vows come in, to shore up our wobbly practice. Because we do wobble. We live in a very imperfect world, and we're all fallible, and so we wobble. And that's where the vows help us. So we'll pick up the Shushogi. If anybody happens to have their, a copy right there, I'll tell you the paragraph numbers if you want to read along. We're on 8. I'm going to pick up at 18, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to choose some passages. This is from the section called Making the Vow to Benefit Beings. To arouse the thought of enlightenment is to vow to save all beings before saving ourselves. Whether layperson or monk, whether deva, heavenly being, or human, whether suffering or at ease, we should quickly form the intention of first saving others before saving ourselves. So when he says thought of enlightenment, he's referring to bodhicitta, the mind of awakening, with the intent not just to achieve personal enlightenment or salvation, but to benefit all beings. And you might have noticed the wording here and elsewhere in Mahayana Buddhist teachings, literature, can make bodhicitta sound kind of dualistic and linear. First make sure everyone else is saved, and then save yourself. Sort of like the hero in a train wreck or a plane crash. But as we read further, we see that's not exactly it. So paragraph 19, though of humble appearance, one who has formed this intention is already the teacher of living beings. Even a girl of 7 is a teacher of the fourfold assembly, a compassionate father to living beings. Do not make an issue of male and female. This is a most wondrous principle of the way of the Buddha. So if you were around when we studied the Lotus Sutra a few years ago, you'll remember the story of the Dragon King's daughter, who was 7 years old and achieved sudden dramatic enlightenment to the amazement of the Buddha's disciple Shariputra, who couldn't believe that a mere girl could do that. It's a great story. And Dogen, in more than one place, makes an unequivocal defense of women's capacity for enlightenment, and also for bodhicitta to arise in any one of us, no matter how inadequate we feel to the vows. I mean, has any of you ever felt inadequate to the bodhisattva vows? I mean, they're pretty daunting. They're pretty impossible. But Dogen says, yes, every one of us can arouse bodhicitta. So just skipping ahead a bit, the next passage comes from Dogen's fascicle called The Four Methods of Guidance. So these are pretty direct quotes from Dogen's. They're not heavily edited, but they're just pieced together from different sources in Dogen. So this comes from Dogen's Four Methods of Guidance, the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. Dogen doesn't, I haven't seen anywhere where Dogen references the set of six paramitas that we studied and practiced at our fall practice period. But he has other lists that overlap the paramitas a lot, and this is one of them. There's another one that are the 8 realizations of enlightenment, or something. There's another set of 8. And these 4 qualities, I think, are kind of Dogen's expression of paramitas. So this is paragraph 21. There are 4 kinds of wisdom that benefit living beings: giving, kind speech, beneficial action, beneficial deeds, and cooperation. These are the practices of the vow of the Bodhisattva. First one, giving, means not to covet. In principle, although nothing is truly one's own, this does not prevent us from giving. Do not disdain even a small offering. Its giving will surely bear fruit. Therefore, we should give even a line or verse of the Dharma, sowing good seeds for this life and other lives. We should give even a penny or a single blade of grass of resources, establishing good roots for this world and other worlds. The Dharma is a resource, and resources are the Dharma. Without coveting reward or thanks from others, we simply share our strength with them. Providing ferries and building bridges are also the perfection of giving. Earning a living and producing goods are fundamentally nothing other than giving. I love this passage. He's encouraging us to just offer our lives, our particular abilities, such as they are, the work of our hands and our minds. And it's the way we do it, the way we do that, the way we live that, that becomes our bodhisattva practice. Generously, without pride, without desire for praise or reward. One thing that always, that used to really impress me in Japanese culture when Michael and I lived there was that there was still a kind of dignity and value in what we tend to dismiss as menial work. So that these guys who would stand at the subway gates with these little hand clickers clicking your subway tickets, Mel's nodding, you remember them? They do it with dignity, you know, like, and there's this kind of, they click your little ticket and you go in. And I just think in our culture, we make a hobby of complaining about work, right? We don't accord people who do menial, what we think of as menial work, we don't accord them dignity, and they don't accord it to themselves. Or we don't, if we think our work is menial. Yeah, so Dogen's saying, forget that. You know, whatever your work is, that you offer it to all beings. Next paragraph, kind speech means when meeting living beings, to think kindly of them and offer them affectionate words. To speak with a feeling of tenderness toward living beings, as if they were one's own infant, is what is meant by kind speech. We should praise the virtuous and pity the virtueless. Kind speech is fundamental to mollifying one's enemies and fostering harmony among one's friends. Hearing kind speech to one's face brightens one's countenance and pleases one's heart. Hearing kind speech indirectly leaves a deep impression. We should realize that kind speech has the power to move heavens. Well, that's self-explanatory. It made me think we all might want, to make a practice this coming week to just observe the effects of kind speech, of whenever we offer it, whenever we receive it, just notice how that feels. Because there's an awful lot of mean speech flying around out there in our world right now. So to whatever extent we can start to turn that around, it will make a difference. The next one is beneficial deeds. Or beneficial actions, that's 23. Beneficial deeds means to devise good ways of benefiting living beings, whether noble or humble. Those who encountered the trapped tortoise and the injured bird simply performed beneficial deeds for them without seeking their reward or thanks. These are references to old Buddhist folk tales. They might go back to China or maybe even to India, where there are many, in fact, folk tales about kindness to animals, or when the Buddha in his earlier lives as a bodhisattva did acts of kindness to animals. Dogen goes on, the foolish believe that their own interests will suffer if they put the benefits of others first. I mean, that's kind of what our culture teaches us, isn't it? But no, this is not the case. Beneficial deeds are one, universally benefiting self and others. So here Dogen equates benefit of self and other. Any perception of opposition is ultimately provisional or limited, narrow. So that difference of you know, self before other, other before self, starts to dissolve. And then the last one is called cooperation in this translation. Cooperation means not to differentiate, to make no distinction between self and others. It is, for example, like the human Tathagata, the human Buddha, who was the same as other human beings. You know, he's saying the Buddha was a human being. There is a way of understanding such that we identify ourselves with others and then identify ourselves, we identify others with ourselves and then identify ourselves with others. At such times, self and other are without boundaries. The ocean does not reject any water. This is cooperation. It is because of this that water collects and becomes an ocean. In another translation, the Kaz Ta-Nehisi translation that we're maybe more familiar with, he translates here called cooperation. He translates it as identity action. And that, I think, can confuse us a bit because we tend to associate the word identity with attachment to a personal identity, to a limited identity. But imagine if human relationships, from families to organizations to societies to nations, actually functioned as though the well-being of the other, of you and yours, is not separate from me and mine. You know, well, how would that be if we could really function that way in our human systems? Not to mention the well-being of plants and animals and ecosystems. So the last section of the Shushogi is called Practicing Buddhism and Repaying Blessings. It's about the importance of gratitude for the Dharma and being able to practice. Dogen says the true path of such expression lies, so the expression of our gratitude lies solely in our daily practice of Buddhism. This means that we practice without neglecting our lives day to day and without being absorbed in ourselves. So we don't want to be, you know, totally self-centered and absorbed, but we also don't neglect our lives. He says, time flies faster than an arrow and life is more transient than the dew. With what skillful means or devices we can retrieve a single day that has passed. 100 years lived to no purpose are days and months to be regretted. It is to be but a pitiful bag of bones. Even if we live in abandon as slaves to the senses for the days and months of 100 years, if we take up practice for a single day, it is not only the practice of this life, but 100 years, but also salvation in the 100 years of another life. This is pretty hyperbolic statement, but he's saying that a moment makes a difference. Every time we turn our view and open our view, it makes a difference. The life of this day is a life that should be esteemed, a bag of bones that should be honored. We should love and respect our bodies and minds, which undertake this practice. Depending on our practice, the practice of the Buddha is manifested, and the great way of the Buddhas penetrates everywhere. Therefore, the practice of a single day is the seed of the Buddhas, the practice of the Buddhas. I really love that passage. The life of this day is a life that should be esteemed, a bag of bones that should be honored. We should love and respect our bodies and minds which undertake this practice. Feels like something we could say to ourselves on a daily basis at times when we're discouraged. And the very end, last section is, these Buddhas are the Buddha Shakyamuni. The Buddha Shakyamuni is mind itself is Buddha. That's a quote mind itself is Buddha. When Buddhas of the past, present, and future together fulfill Buddhahood, they always become the Buddha Shakyamuni. This is mind itself is Buddha. We should carefully investigate who is meant when we say mind itself is Buddha. This is how we repay the blessings of the Buddha. So that last little passage comes from a completely different fascicle. It almost sounds different. Section of the Shobo Genzo. And it's saying that the expression of our gratitude for the Dharma through our everyday lives and actions needs to be rooted in a deep insight into the nature of mind itself. Mind itself is Buddha. And this leads us back to Zazen practice. Leads us right around full circle to Fukan Zazengi. So now that we've read both, the Fukan Zazengi and Shushogi, I think maybe you have a better sense of how they complement and support each other, these different aspects of Dogen's teachings. And that somehow if they were integrated, neither one alone, Fukan Zazengi or Shushogi can really be considered a complete kind of distillation of Dogen's essence. But if they were integrated, they would come much closer. Fukan Zazengi gives us the essentials of Zazen practice, what that means to Dogen. And when I was thinking about that, I remembered that was the first Dogen text I ever heard when Michael and I began practicing with Shohaku Okumura in Kyoto over 35 years ago. He read Fukan Zazengi and talked about it in his beautiful, straightforward, grounded way. And I felt such a sense of liberation just to realize that all I had to do was sit and pay attention to my life, just as it was manifesting in each moment, without grabbing on, without pushing away, without judging. Oh, just this. Just this. Just this is realizing impermanence and no separate self through fully paying attention to our lived experience. So then how does that become the foundation of our speech and our actions in the world, in our everyday lives? How does that practice support us to let go of our conditioned habit patterns of greed, hatred, and ignorance? Well, not so easy, is it? So the Shushogi offers us these practices of repentance, the precepts, the bodhisattva vows, the qualities of generosity, kind speech, beneficial action and cooperation and gratitude. And all these practices are deepened and strengthened by our practice of Zazen until they extend and penetrate through to every aspect, every moment of our lives. So the problem with these two texts, as I have come to see it, is the split between the expectations and the assumptions of monastic life versus lay life. The Shushogi might have been a skillful means for supporting lay practice in the newly modernizing Meiji era of Japan, the turn of the 20th century. But I haven't introduced it to you to suggest we should start chanting it now in the 21st century. But more to suggest that strong distinction between monastic and lay life is not so relevant in our society today. And many Westerners are attracted to Zen practice, seeking relief from the suffering and stress of our lives, perhaps hoping for an enlightenment experience that will set us free once and for all. I've heard people who were around in the early days of San Francisco Zen Center who have said, in those days, people didn't really want to hear about precepts. they just sounded like a bunch of more rules. Who wants rules, right? But most Zen practitioners in the West are lay people, and many ordained priests live non-monastic lives most of the time with work and family responsibilities. So I really believe we need the whole package deal of Dogen's teachings. And it can be helpful to have some sense of early Buddhist teachings and practice too. Not that you have to do intensive historical study or anything like that. But a wider perspective can be good. And I'm intrigued by the idea of what a 21st century Shushogi would look like, what it would include. There's a Soto Zen teacher named Kosho Itagaki who's based in Seattle. I don't really know much about him, but he wrote a really good introduction to this book called Engaging Dogen Zen, which is about the Shushogi. It's a bit uneven. There are various contributors, but his introduction is quite good, and he says that he wants to do that, to create a 21st century version of the Shushogi. But he cautions that the establishment in Japan is quite resistant to such a thing. But we don't have to wait for such a development. We can begin to compile our own collection of passages from Dogen that are meaningful to us and that support our practice. And I want to encourage you to do that. That's why we include Dogen study in our practice once a year, and definitely throughout the year make references to Dogen. So you'll glean some seeds and plant them in your heart and mind so that they will nourish you in times when life is painful and practice feels hard to do. If I were making my own Shushogi, I would definitely include some passages from Fukan Zazengi and the Shushogi, but I'd also include passages from the Genjo Koan, translated as Actualizing the Fundamental Point, and the Mountains and Waters Sutra, and Insentient Beings Teach the Dharma, and any number of other Dogen texts that I have come to love and appreciate. So maybe slowly, bit by bit, you'll assemble or revisit and find passages from Dogen that kind of penetrate like seeds planted in the soil of your practice. Now, if we were in the Zendo together and you all had copies right before you, I'd ask you to, you know, I would have asked you to be marking lines or passages that speak to you or are meaningful. And some of you may have been able to do some of that, and others not. So what I want to do now is just briefly put you into small groups, and maybe you can, you know, if you do happen to have your own copy, share something that has been meaningful to you, or maybe comment on one of these practices, generosity, kind speech, beneficial action, cooperation, gratitude, that maybe you have practiced in this past week or so, or that you would like to focus on in the coming week. One of these practices that seems to resonate and call for your attention. Or anything that just struck you as about these texts. Please just share for about 3 minutes each as I divide you up. And as we've said before, it's not meant to be a discussion so much as a practice of really speaking and listening from the heart of your practice. Okay, remember to introduce yourselves.